Okay, the meeting of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs will come to order. The time now is 1:06 p.m. It's Thursday, March 20th, 2014, in room 120. Members present are Co-Chair Representative Legault, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Higgins is excused, Representative Hughes, Representative Reinbold, Sadler, and Greenberg. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business, and if everybody could just please turn off their cell phones. Today we will be continuing our hearing on HB 313, which is mitigating factor combat-related post-traumatic stress disorders. Public testimony has been previously closed. Representative Guerra, I'd like to invite you to the hot seat there, and if you could just, you know the drill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, is it okay if my aide, Toby Smith, comes up with me?
Absolutely. Thank you, Toby.
Thank you.
Who knows more than I do about some things? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You heard the bill last time. There were a few questions. So we had Rick Davidge, who works with two of the local veterans groups, and also T.P. Hubert, who's with Veterans Incarcerated, which I didn't realize that there was a veterans group that focuses on incarcerated veterans. And they answered the questions that came to us. One was, is PTSD treatment offered in jail? Minimally is the answer. And then another question was, how do people with PTSD fare in jail? And PTSD is something that it's in a sense like a lot of other problems people have. It's with you for life. What you do is you manage it so that you don't face the triggers that cause an event. Incarceration tends to be bad for that, because when you're incarcerated, you can't get away from the things that might trigger you. So the answer to that question is incarceration is not all that useful. We're not saying you don't get incarcerated in this bill if you've committed a crime, but the question came up, so that's the answer. And that's one of the reasons for the mitigator is, if a court determines that your sentence should be reduced, it's a nonviolent crime, then that'll get you out of a harmful circumstance more quickly, and then into treatment, which is what you need to address the issue. I think those are the major questions. Representative Greenberg, who has served, if some of you don't know that, raised a question. The bill is written to say that the mitigator applies if you have a combat-related PTSD or traumatic brain injury. And Representative Greenberg made the good point that you can get PTSD and from serving, you witnessed something, but you weren't shot at. And so he raised the concept of whether it should be service-related. And so we called Ledge Legal. The term service-related is already defined in statute. The Ledge Legal attorney, Kathleen Strassball, is on the phone. It's totally up to the committee whether or not they want to change combat-related to service-related. We're fine either way, but Representative Greenberg seemed to make a good point there.
Well, thank you, Representative. We've got, before we move on to the amendments, I just wanted to note that we do have three people available. If there are questions, that is Laura Brooks with the Department of Corrections, Quinlan Steiner with Public Defenders, and Kathleen Strassbaugh with the Legislative Legal. So are there any questions of the committee before we move on to the amendment? Representative Greenberg?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, we have Quinlan Steiner, and who was the other person from the administration?
Laura Brooks from the Department of Corrections, and Kathleen Strassbaugh with the
I would just ask if the Department of Corrections or the public defenders have any comments on the bill that they'd like to put on the record.
Okay, and for those of you on the phone, do you have any comments that you'd like to put on the record? Okay, we're hearing none. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we actually move to the amendment, even the language as it currently stands, talks about defendant committing offense while suffering from. Is someone who has been diagnosed with PTSD always considered to be suffering from PTSD?
Mm, through the chair, Representative Sadler. I think a court would, that term, I guess, could be viewed as pejorative. If you would like to change that term, that's fine. But I think a court would interpret that as meaning has PTSD, has traumatic brain injury. I don't have the magic word to use there. I'm not sure if the amendment doesn't use the word suffering.
Yes, it does.
It does.
Line 12.
We've got Representative Nadeau and then Representative Greenberg.
I guess I was just going to say, I mean, that seems to be kind of a common, would you call it colloquial? But I mean, we talk about suffering from a cold, suffering from the flu, suffering from whatever it is, you know, kind of like an illness. So.
To the point.
Mr. Chair.
Or to the point, Representative Greenberg.
The origin of my question is I want to find out if someone has been diagnosed, if there's considered to be times when the effects of that condition might be more pronounced or you flare-ups kind of thing. I just want to make sure there's no delineation between having the condition, being diagnosed, and some suffering from it. It's like it's a flare-up or something. And the question then goes to, how do you know that that's happening at that point?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenberg and then Representative Garrett.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Sadler, this is an amendment to the existing statute. And terms in this new subsection will be construed the way all the other terms have been in the same statute. The Latin phrase is in pari materia. That means that they construe all aspects of the same statute the same way. And if you look on page 3 of the bill, in section 18, where they're talking about other mental diseases or defects, or just generally.
Section 18?
Yeah, it's on page in the bill, page 3, line 15, in subsection 18. The term there is suffering from mental disease or defect. And I believe that you don't have to show it's a flare-up or whatever. It would depend upon the facts of the case. But if you've been diagnosed, then as a matter of law, probably you're suffering from it. They construe the terms the same way. This isn't anything new.
But to that point, it's
in
the bill, House Bill 313, page 3, line 31. I just saw the new language suffering, so I hadn't seen the other. So
I hope that answers the question.
Representative Greenberg's right, and there's a mitigator for FAS. I'm going to use the word suffering there, so it's consistent in the statutes. If you decide that you'd like another word, we could work with you in Ledge Legal, hopefully after this goes to when this goes to the next committee. But I have no, if there's a better word, I'm happy to put it in there.
Senator Greenberg?
Mr. Chair, I would hope we would keep the term consistent. I think that's very important.
Are there any further questions of the committee?
I apologize not having reviewed it thoroughly or heard it before, but how does one determine that the defendant's judgment, behavior, capacity, recognized reality, or ability to cope with demands of life was substantially impaired by the PTSD? And who makes that determination?
Thank you. For all the mitigators, the burden is on the defendant. They have to bring in an expert, a psychologist, somebody with expertise in the area. It may not be a psychologist. I don't know who the court would accept as an expert. And they would have to, it could be a VA doctor. They would have to say it was active PTSD which contributed to the nonviolent crime. So, and then the prosecution might bring in their own expert and say, no, we think this is not true, and then it's for the judge to decide. I think actually it's a jury question. Is it a jury question? Judge question. It's for the judge to decide. So if the prosecution for some reason is suspect about the veteran's claim, then they can bring in an expert, and the burden is on the defendant, so it's on the veteran to prove, like all of the mitigators, that the burden is on them to prove. They'll need an expert. You can't just walk in and say it.
So, Greenberg?
Yes. I believe the burden is not only on the defendant normally, but it's by clear and convincing evidence, which is the highest civil standard. I think that these questions should be directed to Mr. Steiner. And if we could ask Mr. Steiner, please, to start going back with your first question so we have somebody who practices in the area. Could we do that, Mr. Chair?
Quinlan Steiner, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Quinlan Steiner. I'm a public defender for the state of Alaska.
And here.
You might need to turn the volume up.
Can you hear me?
There you go. Go ahead, Quinlan.
Yes. Could you repeat the question? I caught the questions. I think they were answered correctly, but if you'd like to go through them and repeat them, I will.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. The question I would ask, Representative Morgat raises a point. What is the burden of proof to show that a person's military PTSD substantially impaired the defendant's judgment, behavior, capacity? And what's the burden of proof, and how is that decided?
The burden of proof is clear and convincing, and it is a question that the judge decides for a mitigator such as this. Typically, how that plays out is the defense would secure an expert who would evaluate the client and then present that testimony to the judge.
Just kind of far-reaching, I've got three attorneys on the stand here. I can ask some questions. This is great. Has PTSD been used as a mitigator or aggravator in any other standard of legal activity in state courts in Alaska?
Mr. Chair, yeah, I mean, this would be presented in mitigation under another mitigator, section of the mitigator statute. So it's often debated whether or not it qualifies, but I think it has been applied. This particular mitigator would make it absolutely clear that it would apply, which is always good, because the mental health mitigator is quite broad, and there's a lot of debate that goes into what qualifies.
Okay. Thank you.
And this would end that debate.
Thank you, Quinlan. Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the Chair, Representative Sadler, do you want to put to him your question concerning the word suffering also? Have that on the record.
No.
Okay. Then I will, because I think it's important to clarify. Quinlan, did you hear Representative Sadler's questions concerning the use of the word suffering?
I did, and I don't see that as being an issue. I think the word suffering would be applied by the court as intended by the legislature, that if you're diagnosed, and then as the rest of this mitigator establishes, that it affected your behavior in that case, it would be applied.
Okay, great. Well, I think we'll go ahead and move to the amendments. So with that, somebody can move the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the members would turn to the proposed amendment, which is labeled U.1, I would ask that that be labeled amendment number 1 and would offer it.
And I'll object for the purpose of discussion. Representative Greenberg, if you could speak to the amendment.
Sure. Mr. Chair, may I defer to the sponsor who actually had the amendment drafted?
Thank you, Mr. Through the chair. It's like ping pong. Representative Greenberg came up with the idea, so we got it drafted. The original bill says the mitigator only applies if it's a combat-related traumatic brain injury or PTSD. Representative Greenberg, from his time in the service, says sometimes you'll witness something, but you won't be right in the middle of combat, so it service-related makes sense. And then he asked us to see if service-related was already defined in statutes, and it is. So we've used the term service-related and used the definition that's already in Alaska statutes. And Kathleen Strassball is on the phone if you want to confirm that, but that's how we did it. And it's totally up to the committee whether they want to make that change.
So would that mean if somebody, for example, had an office job here in the States, in Alaska, and was involved, let's say, in an automobile accident or something like that, while he was in the service, that would mean under this BIM that that's a service-related post-traumatic stress disorder?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I can't say that I'm an expert on this. I don't know what percentage of people who are in a car accident get PTSD. Some do get traumatic brain injury for sure. It's military service related, and you can prove that during your military service, while you were serving your country, even if it was at a desk and at that time you weren't in combat, but if you were serving your country and during serving your country you got PTSD or traumatic brain injury, yes, it would apply, and that's why I say it's a call for the committee, whether they want to leave it at combat related or service related, and I understand the discussion.
Can I just get a follow-up? So that would even mean if somebody had an accident, for example, off base, if it was while they were serving in the military.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think if it's on your free time, I'm not sure that would apply. I think what you're raising is a question that we won't know the answer to until somebody raises it in court. But my instinct is that if you were out at the movies and you were not on work time and you had a desk job and you got into a car accident, I don't know that would be service-related injury, but I can't tell you for sure, and I bet you that one will have to be litigated.
We have a couple of attorneys on the phone. Maybe we could...
Yeah, Kathleen was on the phone.
Kathleen Strasbaugh, are you there?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Guerra, I think that I'm only guessing, I have to agree with Representative Guerra that that it's going to have to be litigated, but I read resulted from active duty, meaning engaged in some kind of activity related to one's service. And if one's service is conducted in a 9-to-5 basis, it may be that it's not included, that it's not, it certainly isn't something we can be sure of the outcome in court.
Thank you.
I've got Representative Hughes, Sadler, and then Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, related to that, I understand military service related is defined in statute, so maybe that would help us with that. Do you have that information, how that's defined?
Yes. Through the chair, as I may, Representative Hughes, I used a generic definition. It's actually in our retirement statutes, and it's designed to designate what service will be credited under certain circumstances in the retirement system. And it's a generic definition that it's active duty in the United States Armed Services is required.
Okay, well, what's your next item?
The definition embedded in the statute, but that's the impact of the way it's written.
Thank you. Representative Sadler?
Thank you. And that might kind of open a wider philosophical issue. I do support that. I like the idea of the bill. I think that the military folks often have experiences that we don't, somebody inside, don't understand and can't really appreciate, and that do influence activity. And I think considering this as a mitigating factor is not a bad way to go. But there are other people, as Representative Ledoux raised, that might suffer PTSD from a car accident, from childhood trauma, from criminal assaults, from riots, or anything else. Was there consideration given to extending this kind of mitigation protection to others who have PTSD, not necessarily from military service-related causes?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, thank you. There was, and ultimately this will be a call for the legislature. I can give you the pro and the con. The pro is that anybody who has a significant problem like that, you can make the very good argument should be treated equally. The other is, on the flip side, if all defendants are allowed to raise it even when they haven't served in the military, you are going to get a lot of honest claims from people who really do have PTSD, but then you open it up to anybody in the world coming up with the claim that their crime was PTSD related when they're not telling the truth. So you have people who are telling the truth, but you'd have a lot more people who aren't telling the truth. Somebody also raised the question of autism, except autism is clearly covered by Section 18, so we don't have to worry about autism, but the Section 18 mitigator covers autism. So, you know, if you want to expand it, I would understand it. If you didn't want to expand it, I would understand it. Unfortunately, sometimes the way politics work across the country, you know, I think the way the bill is written right now gives it a much better chance of passing, but that may or may not be your concern. And you know, I'm happy to carry the bill the way folks want it carried, but I think you will open the door up to a lot of people claiming something they don't have. But you're right, there are people who legitimately have PTSD that's not covered, and who that isn't military related, and traumatic brain injury that isn't military related. The Section 18 mitigator is not clear whether it covers those conditions, which is why we've got this bill. I do want to protect our military members with this bill. If it can pass either way, I'm fine either way. I'm just concerned then the prosecution will come in and say, well, we don't want to have to defend against all these extra cases. And it's a call for the committee.
Thank you. I've got Representative Greenberg, then Weinberg, and Nadine.
I'll defer. I'm looking. Well, let me just, if I may. Mr. Asboff, through the chair, you said you looked at a retirement statute. Could you give me the citation on that, please?
Yes, that would be 1425-220 and 3935-680.
3935-680 and 14 what?
25-220.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at those and I'll get those distributed if I can get Title 14.
Okay, we've got Representative Weinberg, then Nadine.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Basically, what my question is I appreciate the amendment being brought forth, but my concern is that maybe opening the tent just a little bit too big. And the reason I think that the initial bill may be more likely to pass is because it seems like if you witnessed, you know, the combat, you would probably be part of the combat unit. You know, it seems like those people may be in that same unit. So basically, what my question to you, if you could just remind me, how many other states have passed similar legislation, and which words did they use in their legislation?
Through the chair, and I'll have my aide Toby correct me if I'm right. First of all, every state's criminal statutes are so different that we haven't done an exhaustive search at all. We did get one memo from somebody saying we would be the first, but I'm suspect of that memo, so I don't know the answer, and I don't know how we'd be able to get the answer very accurately. So I hope the committee would just decide this based on whether they think it's a good idea, not whether or not other states have done it in their very different criminal law systems. Wait, we have an answer according to Sophie. According to the folks who I said wrote the responses to you, California and Minnesota have veteran-specific legislation that's similar.
Okay, so I guess what my question was, do they use military service-related or combat-related, or do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
To the chair, sorry.
We've got Representative Nadine and then Greenberg.
May I just interrupt for 1 second, please?
Follow up?
If I may, Ms. Strasbaum, I must have copied down the statutes and numbers wrong. Would you give me the two statutes again, please?
That would be 1425-220.
I'm looking in there. I don't see anything that says service-related.
No, it says military service.
Oh, military service. And the other one, yeah, the other one is what again?
39.35.680.
Okay, thank you. Okay, here.
What's the name of the bill?
You know, I really like this bill, and I like it the way it is, without broadening it. But now that I'm looking at Section 18, I guess I'm wondering, I mean, in what universe would post-traumatic stress disorder not be considered a mental disease or defect?
Through the chair, just so I can get the statute in front of me. I'm trying to look for Section 18. Just to answer the prior question, in California and Minnesota, it's service-related and not combat-related. The term in Section 18, which is why Mr. Steiner said it's a gray area, is that covers mental disease or defect.
Mm-hmm.
You've got two problems. Number one, a lot of military members, veterans with PTSD, don't consider that a defect or disease. And they're very resistant to that kind of labeling. And they are, even if this definition applied, are going to be more combative towards their attorney about whether or not to use it just because they don't consider what they have a disease or defect. Then the question is it a disease or a defect? It's an injury. We know that. But is it a disease or defect? That's the gray area that Mr. Steiner was talking about. And so we want to make sure that it's clear in the statutes that, you know, if you can get it in under Section 18, that's fine. But we want to make sure that if you can't, there's a specific statute that erases all doubt so you don't have to litigate up to the Supreme Court as to whether or not you're entitled to the mitigator. And plus you relieve the veteran of having to argue with their attorney legitimately whether they want to be considered somebody who has a mental defect. And you'll hear from, we've been told by Rick Davidge, for example, but you'll hear from people like Rick that veterans with this condition do not like ever to be, many people with this condition do not like ever to have to say that this is, that their condition is a mental defect or disease.
Thank you.
Representative Greenberg, do you have a follow-up with the statutes that you got?
Yeah, with respect to the question, the narrow question presented by the amendment, and I'm kind of looking at Representative Reingold on this. I hope that you'd be willing to accept it. And the reason being, in order, and we could get, if necessary, the veteran person or something, the term combat-related, which is in the bill, on line one, et cetera, page four, that may technically depend upon exactly where the person was at the moment. For example, I don't know that we would have to have a state of war declared. It might be, you know, like a Grenada situation. That probably was combat-related, but I'm not sure. But you could have a very stressful PTSD-inducing kind of a situation that isn't specifically related to combat. Let me give you an example. I was on a ship, and the ship was taking on ammunition at a dump. And suddenly I looked at the side on the dock, and all the workers were fleeing the ship. A fire had broken out in the hold, and we had to go down and put it out. Other circumstances, when I was in my cruiser carrier, I think I mentioned this, my first night on the bridge, it was pitch black, and these guys are plane pushers. They physically pushed the planes around on the flight deck. Very dangerous work. A guy fell over, and they fortunately were able to fish him out. But that could have happened even in a non-combat situation. And I would very much like to see those kinds of people, if they suffer from PTSD, be able to utilize it. I don't want to get into a non-related legal definition that the lawyers will love, frankly, but won't advance the mental health of this person in the treatment.
Further questions, Representative Hughes?
Yes, I appreciate the amendment. I'm struggling a little bit because I don't think it should be opened up either. However, if there were a way to add those who are not in non-combat where they're in high-risk training exercises or something, I'm thinking of a training exercise, there's a helicopter crash or something like that, and the person has PTSD as well as maybe even the traumatic brain injury. They are serving their country. So I don't know if there would be a way to do that, but if there's not, then I would think we would need to stick to the combat-related because it could get out of hand, I'm sorry to say. But I understand the particular incidents you're trying to cover, so I don't know if it could be teased out and narrowed down to cover the kind of things that you're actually thinking about. And that's the challenge here.
Representative Greenberg?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. part of my concern is looking at the way these things are done. Veterans have a great difficulty often in getting the government to cover and diagnose their condition because, for example, that may entitle them to fairly expensive and lengthy medical or psychiatric treatment. And they have to go through real problems in getting covered. And here what we're talking about is something that is in a sentencing hearing in court. And if in fact the person has got the problem, they should be able to bring it to the attention of the court and the court makes a decision. And the more we tie this up in potential litigation that's not at all related to the situation that they're finding themselves in, which is a sentencing, it's going to defeat the purpose. And I would, in this case, rather be over-inclusive than under-inclusive because the judge will make the decision.
Representative Hughes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are two informational pieces that I believe are important for us to have as background information, kind of to just step aside from what we're debating right now about this amendment. And that is, I was reading Rick Davidge's, his comments, which seem to be coming answers regarding nationally, and I was hoping for more Alaska-specific information. And so I was wondering if you know how many veterans we actually have incarcerated in Alaska. And then you referred to veterans courts, and I'm not familiar. I don't believe we have veterans court in Alaska, and whether that is something that potentially we could have in the future, or has there been talk about that? Is that something we're looking into? Because that could affect this, because people going through veterans courts would all be veterans, and I would think that there would be some consideration. So those pieces of information, I was wondering if the sponsor might have that.
Through the chair, I can't tell you the numbers. I think we do not have Alaska-specific numbers. I just don't think that we have the staff and the ability to have Alaska-specific numbers, or that the folks who do veterans work have that ability. In terms of veterans courts, this only applies in state courts. So this mitigator and state statutes only apply in state court. They wouldn't apply in a under a federal statute. So if there are veterans courts that apply federal statutes, this statute's not going to apply anyway. But I don't know more about that question other than the statute won't apply.
Thank you. I thought for some reason it was a type of court that some states have chosen to have. And then also, I don't know if we have anyone from Corrections or DMVA, but they're doing intake of inmates, and I'm assuming they don't ask them. There's not a checkbox for whether they're a veteran or not. Is that correct?
That I don't know. I don't know if the Department of Corrections keeps those statistics. But what I do know is that a lot of people who have PTSD haven't had it diagnosed. So they're not going to have accurate numbers as to the number of people in corrections who have PTSD. That's for sure. But as to whether or not they keep statistics as to the number of veterans in who are incarcerated, I don't know that answer.
We've got Representative Sadler, but I just wanted to give the opportunity to the Department of Corrections if they had any of the statistics. Laura Brooks, are you online there? I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Laura Brooks with the Department of Corrections. I oversee inmate health care for DOC. In answer to Representative Hughes' question, it's kind of a yes and a no. We do ask inmates when they are remanded if they have veterans benefits. But because we're still in a paper medical record system, that's not something that is electronically tracked that we could necessarily give you a number for. However, if someone comes into our system who has suffered from PTSD with some functional impairment, they are going to be referred to our mental health staff for further evaluation, and we may be able to pull some numbers for PTSD from that database. However, we wouldn't be able to delineate between which ones are combat-related PTSD versus PTSD from other sources.
That's a problem.
Thank you. And Representative Sadler has a question.
Thank you. Actually, some information, actually. I do know that the state of Alaska, well, I'm on a Veterans Task Force nationally, and the state of Alaska does not have a Veterans Court. The municipality of Anchorage does have a Veterans Municipality. I'm not sure what the legal structure is, but the Anchorage courts do have a Veterans Diversion Program for veterans. And it's not that program. I couldn't give you statistics on it, but I know it exists. Secondly, in looking through the background information, what is PTSD? It says, how common is PTSD? Many Americans have had a trauma. About 60% of men and 50% of women experience at least one traumatic event. Of those who do, about 8% of men and 20% of women will develop PTSD. For some events, like combat and sexual assault, more people develop PTSD. So that's a closer linkage between combat and PTSD, at least in the background material here. I'm sure this is from PTSD. Oh, it looks like from the VA.
Thank you. Representative Randall?
Okay. Thank you, Chair Foster. I guess I am still struggling whether I'm going to vote yes or no on this amendment. I have not decided yet because I remind myself daily of the $17 to $18 trillion debt that we have at a federal level, and I want programs to be sustainable. And this, you know, potentially could cost the military some money, and maybe this is a good use. What I'm hoping is it'll decrease our prison costs, so maybe there's a benefit there. And if they have more access to treatment, then possibly we're putting, you know, people at less risk. So I think that's really good. And also, a reason I'm struggling is what if someone is raped in the military? Does this include them because they get a post-traumatic stress syndrome from that? Would that include them if they're in the military? However, at the other side, if someone gets in a beer ball at a bar and for some reason, you know, gets an injury, is that covered? So I just don't know how wide we're opening this tent up. And I guess I just really believe I need to know some answers to this.
I guess I'm confused as to how this might cost the military money. And I'm directing this, Mr. Chairman, could I direct that question to Representative Reinbold?
I wouldn't be an expert in regards to all this, but if post-traumatic stress syndrome, is Rick Davidge on the line still, or is he on the line at all? Why don't we get an expert that deals with military and veterans affairs? Is there someone online? Whether there would be a cost associated with this?
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Davidge thought public testimony was closed, so he didn't call in today.
Okay.
Maybe I could ask the question to the sponsor of the bill, whether he sees that there's any cost to the military on this?
Mr. Chair, here's where the cost would come in, and possibly. So this only applies after you've been convicted of a crime. That doesn't involve anything different than anybody else who's been convicted of a crime. Then your sentencing time comes. and you're somebody who has military or, let's say, service-related PTSD, and you need to prove that it was caused by either combat or military service, however you decide to adopt this bill, you're going to have to present an expert. You're going to have to pay for that expert, so the PD will pay for that expert. It's possible that the VA may come in with a VA doctor. It's conceivable. And then it's conceivable that the VA may not charge the PD for that cost. So in that one circumstance where a VA doctor came in to diagnose, to say this person had PTSD, that could be some cost on the VA. I don't know if they would try and charge the PDs. I think you would probably get different results in different circumstances, but I don't think that would happen very often. But I can't tell you for sure.
What's the vote? Nadine?
But there's no mandate in this bill that the VA would have to do that.
No.
So if the VA chose not to do that, there's no requirement in this bill that it would have to do that.
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative Ledoux.
Okay, are there any further questions of the committee?
I will, not so much a question, but a comment. I share the co-sponsor's concern about expanding the, about over-broadening the defense of PTSD as a mitigator for a crime. My thought is that restricting it to combat-related, I think, hits most of what the initial target really is. And I know that in recent overseas conflicts, the definition of combat, you know, has come all the way back to to the supposedly secure areas. So I'm not sure how the VA or the DOD would define combat-related. It might very well be those who are in the rear echelon. But if you broaden it to service-related, that brings it all the way back to people who are stateside in a depot, and that speaks, and that frankly extends the broadening it to everybody who might have some kind of traumatic experience. So I would think, to preserve the intent of the bill as I understand it, it might be best to turn back this amendment and retain it, but focused specifically on combat-related PTSD. So.
Representative Garrett, do you have any further comments?
Through the chair, it's up to the will of the committee. The one thing that does limit Representative Greenberg's proposal is if you go with a service-related definition, which we have in statute, that's all the branches of the service, it is only if you're on, if you look at line 14, on active duty. So that does narrow it somewhat. It, you know, if you're driving out to a movie, I'm pretty sure that's not going to be considered active duty, but you're right, if you were in a military depot and not in combat, it would be covered.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. We had opened public testimony. We do have a Michael Coker from Eagle River online, and what I'll do though is first we'll get through the amendment, and then before, if we decide to move the bill, we'll allow him to speak. Any further comments on the amendments? Hearing none, I'll remove my objection on the amendment. Are there any further objections? Let's take a quick and easy. Onto the record here, and so we are currently on the amendments, and I will maintain my objection. And so with that, we can have a roll call.
But may I just
Representative Greenberg?
My concern in offering the amendment was that there may well be people in the service who have PTSD, but it wasn't, in quote, combat related. And I'm wondering if there's anybody online who can speak to whether that's a very real concern, and whether in fact there are people, a lot of people around, who have acquired PTSD on active duty, but it wouldn't fall within the category of combat-related. Mr. Chair, could we ask anybody online if they could address that?
Mr. Chairman, point of order, actually, isn't there a motion on the floor?
There is a motion on the floor.
Well, the motion was...
For a vote.
The motion was my motion to adopt the amendment. What the chair just did was call the question. That's not a separate motion.
Fair enough. There's still a motion on the table.
So I would appreciate if we could see if there's anybody that could address that question.
Let's just get some clarification on this. We'll take any of these. Record here. Is there anybody, I guess with that, do I need to open public testimony then?
No, we're
asking for invited testimony. So is there anybody online who would like to address Representative Grimberg's question? Representative Grimberg?
Yeah. I think that the concern is a legitimate one, and I don't want to argue about something that may not practically make a lot of difference. That's why I was trying to see if we had anybody who could provide that information. I'm going to withdraw the motion to adopt the amendment, and hopefully when the bill comes before the next committee of referral, that we could get somebody there to address it. I don't want to create a problem if none exists. So I will withdraw the motion to adopt amendment number two, or number one.
Okay, are there any objections to withdrawing the amendment? Seeing none, we're back to the main motion, the bill itself. Are there any further questions on the bill? Representative Grimberg?
Are you open to taking up the motion to move the bill?
We do have one person online.
I withdraw the motion.
Okay, so with that, I'm going to open public testimony back up here. Michael Croker from Eagle River, are you online?
Yes, I am, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed.
My name is Michael Kocher, K-O-C-H-E-R. I have no specific affiliation other than myself, but I am a Alaskan Marine Corps vet from Eagle River.
Okay. And do you have any comments on the bill itself, Michael?
I do. I wanted to first off... echo what one of the legislators said earlier, and I'm sorry, I'm terrible with names. It's part of my own, personal issues from being in Iraq and stuff. But the fact that this bill would need to cover non-combat veterans in order to cover victims of military sexual assault, I think is of utmost importance, because the men and women who were assaulted sexually in the military suffer PTSD rates that are, even higher than that of those who have seen direct combat. As far as the definition of combat veteran and stuff, which you guys seem to have asked a couple times, as far as the VA is concerned, if you were deployed to Iraq, Afghanistan, or a few other areas that are considered combat zones, whether you ever left a FOB or not, you are considered to be a combat veteran. It's considered to be a combat deployment. So that could be someone who literally was on a 40,000-person base and never saw anything remotely dangerous happen would be considered a combat veteran as far as the VA is concerned. But I guess I just wanted to say that personally I think that this bill it's a really good idea. I've got a lot of friends who suffer from, PTSD or just, post-traumatic stress in general. And there's definitely been situations that they've gotten themselves into legally or with their families and stuff that have definitely been exacerbated by the symptoms of their PTSD. So I wanted to say I think this is a very important bill, and I'm glad you guys are addressing it.
Thank you, Mr. Croker. Representative Sadler has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Croker. This is Representative Dan Sadler. You're well represented here, whether you live in the Valley or in Chugiak, because we have myself and Representative Reinbold here. You have answered a very important question for all of us in the committee and for the sponsors to say pointedly that if you were in Iraq in the sandbox, almost no matter where you were considered combat-related, and therefore any PTSD generated in there would be covered by the bill as it currently sits before us. Very much appreciate that clarification.
Representative Gere?
Thank you. Mr. Cooper's testimony, I think, complies with our intent, and if it complies with the committee's intent, I think that would be helpful if any litigation were to ever come up, that the committee also intends it to cover what Mr. Cooper defined as the military's definition of combat-related.
Great. Yeah, are there any further questions for Mr. Cooper?
I don't want to go here again, but I think it's important that hopefully in judiciary we'll address whether sexual assault cases are included or excluded from this.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grinder.
I had no idea this testimony was going to be forthcoming. It's like in a trial and a surprise witness comes. Mm-hmm. You guys who've been trial lawyers, you know what I'm talking about. This happens once in a while. And I'd like the committee to consider, in view of the large number of sexual assault cases that are coming forth, I think this committee should send the message that if there's PTSD resulting from that, mm-hmm. it should be within the ambit of this bill. And I would like to know, if I were to reoffer that amendment, if we can send it along, and if it turns out that it's for some reason shouldn't be there, we can go back to the original bill. But I sure don't want to send the message that we don't intend to cover it.
Representative Sutter?
The absence of a negative isn't proof. If you're proposing to reoffer the amendment you proposed and withdrew, I would oppose that. I mean, we made clear on the record what the intent of the bill is as it stands, so I'll just leave it at that.
Any further questions?
I don't want to belabor an issue. May I ask, is there something I'm not seeing here? I won't go there. Okay. I will offer it.
That was
not very comfortable.
Representative Hughes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with respect to my colleague two seats down on my left, I would just want to put on the record, I would not object to the judiciary looking in on this sexual assault, as well as if there is a way to narrow it to the combat training preparation exercises, the injuries resulting from that. I believe that what we have here today is in good shape at this point, but I would not object if the judiciary would look at that. Thank you.
Just a comment, that three of us here do sit on judiciary, so I believe that it will be an issue that does come up again. So, Representative Liddy?
No, I have no problem, and it might be a very good idea to consider this the idea of sexual victims of sexual assault, that be a mitigator. But I'm actually not sure that belongs in a military-related bill. I mean, maybe we should just consider the issue in general, whether it happened in the military or whether it happened any place. And for those reasons, I'd like to see this bill leave committee in a clean form.
Great. We're currently in public testimony. Is there anybody else who would like to testify? Hearing none, we'll go and close public testimony. And are there any further questions of the committee? Representative Greenberg?
I now know why people are thinking the way they're thinking, and I appreciate that. And I think these comments will be very helpful, and the sponsor can determine, the two sponsors, there are two sponsors that will help. And determine how they want to proceed, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Representative Sutter?
Thank you. I think this is a compassionate bill, and I think it does help make clear provision for allowances for unusual circumstances. I think people think that we send their young men and women off to war, they do their duty, they come back, everything's fine and dandy, but there are scars that are hidden, and I think this legislation does provide some way to allow for that. you know, why these young men come back and get in trouble. We don't know, but this might be a factor. I think this allows the judicial system and judges to allow for that. I think it's worthwhile for them.
Okay, with that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move HB 313 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Okay, is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the House Bill 313 is moved out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, and appreciate everybody's time today. Great job. Thank you.
Sure.
We're adjourned.